Chapter 50 Passages. I run my fingertips over the blood-locked armlet, wondering if even now Belina is using it to map Mika's tunnels. At any moment, the Dharma Ting could bring it to life, crippling me where I stand. We are doing as she bade, but it is not in the nature of Dharma Ting to forgive an assault upon their person. I can't believe what you did to Belina, I say. When we were in Shiraj, my spear sisters and I were trained to bully the Ni Dharma Ting, Mika says. The priestesses encouraged it. They called it a reminder to be humble before Everam. Ni Dharma Ting study Sharusak 2 hours a day. My sisters and I studied for 20. 20 hours a day. Even after months of hard training, the number shocks me. How is that possible? Mika shrugs. All things are possible when your sense of self is stripped away in Shiraj. There were 5 of us then, nieces and lesser daughters of the Deliverer, too holy for the black, yet deemed unfit for the white. The Demaja took us into the underpalace and gave us to her eunuch drillmaster, Enkido. Gave you? I ask. Like dogs to be trained. The words horrify me, but Mika speaks them calmly, a pain long accepted. You took orders from Chika, but we belonged to Enkido. If we were not strong enough to survive his training, we knew we would not be missed. Surely, father, I begin. The Shah Dharma Kar only had eyes for the war and his sons, Mika cuts in. We disappeared for years, and I do not think he even noticed. I don't know why this surprises me. My father never had time for me either. And then? We were beaten, Mika says. Sleep-deprived, poisoned, scarred, made to visualize death until we lost our fear of it. Enkido took 5 simpering princesses, reduced us to nothing, and then rebuilt us into Everam's spear sisters. I want to say something, to lay my hand on her, or offer comfort, but for all our years together, Mika has never needed comfort from me. I don't know how to offer it now, in a way she will accept. It wasn't all bad, Mika goes on. In those years, I came to know and rely upon my sisters. All of us vied for Drillmaster Enkido's rare words of praise, like hounds for scraps. We hated him at first, but he had a father's love for us all, and in time, we shared daughter's love for him. This is what training does, she goes on. It is how the clerics take people and turn them into weapons. A brutal start to destroy your old world, then they craft a false world around you. This one with an illusion of stability. It makes you love those hurt beside you more for your shared pain. It makes you love those doing the hurting, for they do it to teach you, to better you. Instead, you direct your hurt at their enemies. Mika sighs. I did not question it until I came to Hollow. I was still the Demaja's creature then. And your mother knew it. She trusted me to protect you, but not to instruct you. But living in Hollow, falling in love, taught me how much bigger the world was than secret tunnels and assassination. I thought you Greenlanders soft, but in time I came to see I would kill anyone who tried to make you hard. In this, like so many things, I failed you. You could never fail me, I say. Perhaps fate wanted me hard. In Evera, Mika says. Do you still believe Enkido loved you? I ask. Mika is quiet a long time. In his way, I think he did, she says at last. But he, too, was stunted by Shiraj. I am not certain he truly understood what love was. I did not, when I first came to your mother's court. I wonder if Chadan understands love, if even I do. Do you love him still? Mika nods. We filled as many tear bottles as daughters when he fell to the Alagai. Even now, I cannot sift who I am from what he made me. She shrugs. It is too much for me to judge. So I love him as a daughter would, without condition. I nod, unable to keep my thoughts from driving back to Chadan, left tied and humiliated in the hall above. Did he ever truly love me? Did I him? Or were our feelings twisted by what Sharaj and the Alagai put us through? Are we ourselves? Or what Chikga made of us? Is it still possible to sift the real me from the result? After a few twists and turns, Mika stops, lifting a large wardstone from the wall. It is hinged on top, hiding a lever. When she pulls it, there is a thunk in the floor beneath our feet. She replaces the ward and pushes down on a large cornerstone on the floor, opening a hidden trap. A secret passage inside a secret passage, I ask. Sharik Hora is riddled with them, Mika says. Some of the Dharma and Dharma Ting have used them for centuries, but others were lost to time until the Damaja used the Alagai Hora to divine their locations for her agents. Even after all I've seen, it's hard to think of Nani Mika as an agent of my father's mysterious Jiwa Ka, but she moves about these tunnels like they are part of her. There is so much about her I don't know. You first, Mika says. Hang from the lip, and the drop is not far. The room below is dimly lit, but still bright enough that I shield my eyes after moving through the dark tunnel. I do as she says, dropping lightly to a smooth stone floor. I look up to see Mika follow, tumbling out of the path of the trapdoor as it swings shut by some hidden mechanism. She drops silently beside me as my eyes adjust to the dim light filtering through shuttered windows. There is a fire pit, water troughs, buckets and ladle, benches to sit and lie upon. It's a sweat room, I realize, but like everything in Sharik Hora, it is built out of human bones in a macabre display. The troughs and buckets are shaped of interlocking bone, sealed with resin to keep them from leaking. The thought of soaking in water ladled from a hero's skull makes me gag. Creator, why would anyone come here? Mika nods. Even the Dharma believe it is haunted. They whisper these are the bones of martyrs too anguished to find the lonely path, their souls trapped on Allah. Once I saw a Dharma come here seeking a vision. Another time two Ni-Dharma stoked the fire on a dare but lost their nerve at the ladle. Otherwise, everyone avoids the place. Guess that helps keep it secret. Selin steps into the light with Rojvar beside her. But it ain't a place you want to wait around in. I rush to her, and this time she opens her arms, squeezing tight. You've still got a lot of explaining to do, she says in my ear. As do you. I crush her tighter against me. For this moment, none of that matters. Mika moves to a corner of the room behind the piles of sweatstones, stacks of polished obsidian heated with fire to make steam. She shifts a few bones, and there is a click as she pushes the corner inward, creating a space wide enough for us to crouch and squeeze through. We follow as Mika leads us down, down into the undercity. Mostly we travel the secret ways, but occasionally our path leads through seldom trafficked rooms and halls of the temple proper. I lose track of the twists and turns before she opens one last hidden door, revealing a large room nestled deep beneath Sharik Hora. Inside, everything is coated in a thick layer of dust, the place doubtless undisturbed since my father led the exodus from Desert Spear almost 20 years ago. This is a Sharum Ting safe room, Mika says, lighting skull lamps like those I saw above. The Maja have more space than they require, so there was never any need to search for hidden chambers. There is ancient magic here, centuries of heroes' bones shaping and concentrating its protections. She looks at my armlet. Belina will no more be able to track you in this place than she might hear a whisper in a room full of shouting warriors. We are safe here. The words are comforting, but I cannot help but feel unsure. I know something of horror magic, but the magic of heroes' bones is still a mystery to me. Eh, safe until we starve. Selen looks decidedly uncomfortable amid the bleached bones. That won't be a concern. Mika leads us to the back of the chamber, where a door leads to a natural cavern, complete with a waterfall and pool. The oasis is above us. There is fresh water and fish. She gestures beside the pool, where a field of mushrooms grow. Those are safe to eat. There are stores of honey, nuts, and salt as well. Indeed, this hidden shelter seems to have everything we need. There is a sleeping area, Sharum Ting blacks with plates of fired clay, and weapons. What are those? I ask in wonder, moving to the racks. There are standard shields, trimmed with what look like ulnai and radii. Arrows and spears with bone heads. A mace made from what looks like a man's thigh lashed to a large skull. Weapons and armor blessed with Sharik horror, Mika says. A last resort, if the Alagai ever attack the Holy City. Things get that bad. Are a few bone spears going to be enough to save us? I ask. It is always the warrior you must put your faith in, Mika says. Never the weapon. Remain here while I am gone. Protect one another. Where are you going? I ask. To meet Darren and find my nephew, Mika says. I have not seen Arik since he was in Swaddling. If the Sharum have harmed him, I think of the swollen purple bruises on Arik's pale face and on the faces of his captors. They were not gentle, sister, but trust that for every bruise, there are 3 arms of Everam similarly marked. Mika grunts, but it is a prideful sound. I would expect no less from my spear sister Sikfa's son. Selen and I change into warrior blacks, then set about dusting off the ancient chamber as we gather food and water. Only Rojvar seems at ease amid the leering skulls. Hours pass, and I run out of work to do, pacing the chamber until at last Mika returns with Darren and Arik, the latter now clad in the white-sleeved blacks of the temple guard. His eyes and hands darkened with makeup. He appears indistinguishable from the real thing. Arik and I have yet to be formally introduced, but Mika takes her nephew aside as soon as the door seals behind them. Darren is still clad in what looks like a cross between farmer's denim and Krasian high fashion. He has retrieved his satchel from wherever the guards stored it, and his pipes and his mother's knife are on his belt, along with a sack of what I assume are the other belongings the Sharum confiscated. What? He asks warily, as he catches me staring. I smile. Just thinking you should compliment your tailor. Rare to see you looking so fashion-forward. Eh, you know Darren, Selen says. Moaned and complained the whole time they were measuring him. But don't let it fool you. He loves skulking around in his bespoke denim breeches. I laugh. And suddenly I'm Princess Olive again. 10 summers old, with my best friends in the world. Arik has drifted to the rack of ancient horror weapons. He lifts a bone spear, putting it through the deft spins of a complex shuriken. Mika puts her hand on her heart, and Rojva joins them, producing a tear bottle for her aunt as tears stream down her face. Darren sniffs the air, then turns his head to look directly at the hidden door at the far end of the room. How about we go fishing? Darren does all the fishing, while Selin and I sit by the water. I don't know how he does it, but he hooks fish after fish, even as he recounts their adventures on the road south. You'd never know it to look at him. But when Darren has a story to tell, his jongleur training kicks in. Voices, accents, impressions. There's more expression on the faces of his characters than I've ever seen him display on his own. Selin heckles a bit at first, when he forgets something or misremembers one of her favourite parts. But then, both of us fall under Darren's spell. Selin squeezes my hand when he speaks of the remains of Mother's escort, and I bite my lip to keep from crying. A few minutes later, we clutch at each other, howling with laughter at Darren's impression of an innkeeper arguing with her husband, or the way the merchant smelled. He makes himself the butt of half the jokes, giving the impression of a buffoon Selin all but carried on her back. But I can see in the way she looks at him that it's nothing close to the truth. I wonder if they've kissed again. And it's such a normal thought that it seems alien to me. When did I last have time for the luxury of wondering who Selin's been kissing? It's my turn next. I don't have Darren's flair, but I try to be honest, even when it paints me in a poor light. Parts of the tale feel different in the telling than they did when lived. Another skin I've begun to shed. But I speak of Chadan and my spear brothers, and find some of my feelings are still fresh, still raw. It will be nightfall soon, the first night of waning, when Alagai Kaa is said to walk the night. I should be with my brothers, not hiding here amid the bones of true Sharik.